It is without doubt the greatest sport in the world.
Lando Norris is the Formula One world champion. Oh, he hits him! Kimi Antonelli into the side of Charles Leclerc. And Verstappen roars around the outside to take the lead in spectacular fashion.
But let's face it, there's a lot going on, especially this year.
I think this change is yet to become the biggest.
I mean, everything changes.
There's so much to adapt to. We have no reference. What I've seen in the simulator, it is more work. It's more management for the driver.
One side is really exciting. For the other side, is like, oh my God, hopefully we get this right.
Yeah.
It's Formula One's biggest set of rule changes ever. We've got new engines, new cars, new regulations. We know you've got questions, so this is the place to get answers.
Hi, Christian. It's Catherine from Pennsylvania. I have a question for you. What happens in an F1 garage during a race?
The moments before a pit stop, that's what we're witnessing right now, are so important.
A couple of laps before the pit stop, we normally get a standby call, and basically that's when you get ready.
Alex Albon, hello, welcome to F1 Express.
You might as well come in, Alex.
I use James's office for his toilet.
And to be really clear, well, you don't use my office, you use the toilet in my office.
I use the toilet in the office. Yeah, that's
really important to get that clear on camera.
I'll see you in about 10 minutes.
This is F1 Explains, the official F1 podcast devoted to answering your questions about our favourite sports. No matter how big or small, we'll get to the bottom of it with the help of some of the biggest names in the sport and some you don't usually get to hear from. All direct from the paddock.
What's a simple way of explaining it? I think it's just it's personalities.
It's a nice
some
way of putting it, though.
Nicer, some are more aggressive, some are mean, some are horrible.
And I've some got a horrible driving style.
Are lovely.
The idea for the car actually came from Toto Wolff. Toto said, you know, don't start with a movie car and try to make it fast. He said, you should start with a real race car.
You know, you save a bit of the rear tires when you do lift and coast. Because you put less energy on them when you hit the brakes, you know, you're not still going on power. So you already gave them time to, let's say, breathe in these 20 meters. When you hit the brake, you put less energy on them.
Is stuff like that a challenge when you're doing it at such speed?
No, honestly not.
That's why you're really good at it.
Yeah, I mean, thank you.
We've been waiting all winter and now lights out is just around the corner. So let's get on with it. Welcome to a brand new season of F1 Explains. Hello everyone, it's great to be back. If you've been listening to F1 Explains for ages, welcome back. Well done for finding us in our new home. We've still got some boxes to unpack, but we're doing okay. If you are an F1 Nation listener, welcome. Don't worry, Tom Clarkson and his esteemed guests will still be here previewing and reviewing every single race across the Formula One season. But now, as well as Tom and the gang, you also get me popping up every Friday with F1 Explains. So it's such a pleasure to be talking to you ahead of the new season. My name is Christian Hugill, a Formula One fan since the late 90s, which ages me, living the dream as an F1 presenter and reporter for the past 4 or 5 years or so. It is genuinely my favourite sport in the world. It always has been. The more I learn about it, the more I love it. And that is what F1 Explains is all about. It's why I love doing this show. Every week we unpack, unpick and explain the sport. It doesn't matter if you've been watching F1 for 5 minutes, 5 days, 5 years, 5 decades. You're welcome here. Send your questions to F1Explains@F1.com. We will get answers to those questions from the very best Formula One experts. And we have one right here, my friends, an encyclopedia of F1 wisdom. He is recognised all over the world. I do like it when he gets recognised and I'm with him. It's good fun. I've taken many a picture of this man with fans. I really have. He talks to Formula One drivers for a living. And perhaps most importantly, he has a shoe collection that belongs in a walk-in wardrobe from the Devil Wears Prada. Lawrence Barreto, F1 correspondent and presenter, just back from Bahrain, just about to head to Australia. Welcome back to F1 Explains, Lawrence. It's lovely to see you.
I mean, wow, Christian, where do I go after an intro like that? I kind of feel like I just want you to be with me all the time. So every time I meet someone new, you can just introduce me like that, if that's okay.
Those who've been with F1 Explains for a while will know I like a hype up. I like being a hype man. It's good. Lawrence, you are, well, no, but I also mean it. I genuinely, I think anyone who knows me, I say what I think. And Lawrence, you are an encyclopedia of Formula One knowledge. You are extremely handy to us, therefore, on F1 Explains. And listen, we're going to be digging into all these new things that have changed on F1 Explains over the course of the coming weeks. We're certainly devoting the first chunk of the season to it before we get back to explaining more general bits of the sport, to doing our quick fire episodes that we do where it's just anything and everything. So we're devoting the first bit of the season to the 2026 rule changes. What we're aiming to do this episode is a bit of broad brushstrokes, if you like. We're going to run through sort of everything that's changed, and then we'll dig into it in a lot more detail in the coming weeks. Do you want to do some broad brushstrokes with me, Lawrence? Do you fancy that?
Yeah, I think that's about my quality of painting. So yeah, broad brushstrokes I can do. It's the fine detail maybe of that painting isn't so strong for me.
You can catch Lawrence's new painting video podcast, Broad Brushstrokes with Barretto. That's coming soon, wherever you get your podcasts. Now, firstly, let's start with the 2026 regulations. The new cars have different front and rear wings. They have new engines. We, for some reason, like to call them power units sometimes, where 50% of the power comes from the electric battery. You are going to hear the drivers, TV commentators like Mr. Alex Jakes, ace reporters like Lawrence, saying lots of new words. So we will get on to things like teams and tyres and things later on. Let's start with these new words, a bit of new terminology. Lawrence, if I say a word, a word we're expecting to hear this year,
okay.
Do you want to sort of tell me what it means? Okay, right. So boost. When am I going to hear boost?
Okay, well, I'm glad that we've started with a nice, easy one. Boost does what it says on the tin. So it's an extra bit of energy that they'll get from the battery that they can use whenever they like around the lap. But they've got to be careful because they only get a certain amount per lap. So you might want to burn it over a couple of corners, or you might want to use a little bit of it all around the lap. You can use that to attack and to defend. So a little bit of extra juice, should we say, in the back pocket.
A little bit of extra juice. I'm also looking forward to finding out which drivers become good at utilizing it. As you just said, Lawrence, when and where, you know, your wily old foxes of this world, maybe your Fernando Alonso's, might be able to use their big racing brains to eke out a bit of an advantage, maybe.
Yeah, I think there'll be certain corners where I think drivers who are just better into certain types of corners will be able to maybe save or maybe not need to use it. Obviously, the performance of your car will determine how much you need to use it anyway. If you're up against a car that's slightly faster than you, you might have to be slightly cleverer in the way that you use that energy. If you're kind of chasing a car that you know you're slightly quicker than, you won't have to use all of the energy that you've got in your allowance.
Overtake. Now, listen, we all know what overtake means, right? But there's a specific way we're going to be hearing the word overtake used this year.
Yeah, so essentially it's an other opportunity to use an extra amount of energy to give you an extra boost. So you can technically use overtake and boost together. Overtake, though, is only allowed if you are within 1 second of the car in front. So obviously this year, and I know we'll get onto this, there isn't any DRS. So it means that there is still an opportunity to get a boost in the form of overtake. Stay with me. And what you can do is you can use this extra power on the following lap after you've been within 1 second of a car in the detection zone. So the detection zones will be very similar to what you would have seen last year when you were trying to get DRS to use that down a straight. You'll have those same detection zones this year, but this time you'll learn this overtake use for being in 1 second of the car in front.
And what I would say, I'm going to steal something here from my dear friend Greg, who, when we were talking about this, Greg's a big Formula One fan, and he said to me, sometimes when you're watching a film, you might not necessarily understand every part of the film, but you're encouraged to carry on watching. And all becomes clear because the clever people who write the film have thought about it. And the one thing I would say is, if you know, it's F1's biggest rule change in a generation, possibly ever. I don't think anybody's necessarily expecting everybody to pick everything up that's new straight away. But listen, we've got 24 races. We've got time to watch and all will become clear. Alex is from Bucharest in Romania. Alex has emailed f1explains@f1.com. And Alex, you are the first listener question of the year here on F1 Explains. That means producer Chris will send you personally a prize out from his own collection of Formula One memorabilia to you. That's a lie, he won't. But you know, he might do. You never know. Alex says, what happens when the battery runs out? Will it recharge or will it stay discharged until the end of the race? Lawrence.
Well, the good news is it won't stay discharged until the end of the race. There is recharge available to all of the drivers. And this will be quite a big talking point, I think, over the course of the year, is in the way in which you go about recharging your battery to make sure that you've always got as much juice in it as possible. So essentially, cars are going to harvest the energy through various means. Braking, which they've done for many years anyway, when they're on part throttle, so not when they're fully compressing the throttle. When they're lifting off, so you would have heard commentators like Alex Jake say lifting coast, or you might hear the team engineers talking to their drivers and saying lifting coast. So that is when you come off the throttle early and then the battery will start recharging. Or this year, you're going to hear a term quite often called super clipping. And this is at the end of the straight. There'll be some extra harvesting that will happen when the car is still at full throttle, but it's maxed out in terms of what it can do top speed wise.
Super clipping is just a fun term, so I enjoy that. And listen, Formula One, one of its great strengths is that it has always used pioneering technology, and the teams use it. It's one of the reasons that they enjoy competing in Formula One. That technology filters down and eventually ends up in the cars that you and I drive. I've got an electric car. If I put it in a little B mode as opposed to a D mode to drive, whenever I lift my foot off the gas, it harvests energy. It recovers energy. So if you own an electric car, even a hybrid car, you essentially see this in your own car. The MGUK is the component on the engine that is so much bigger this season. The K stands for kinetic energy. It's recovering that energy kinetically, and it is going to be a bigger part of Formula One this year. And as you say, Lawrence, recharge is a word we're going to hear a lot as the cars look to try and as the drivers look to try and recharge as much as possible. Moving on, while we're sort of on the engine, turbo, Lawrence, again, another word we're expecting to hear a bit more of.
Yeah, absolutely. So the turbo is a part of a combustion engine which increases the power. Now, in the previous rear wheel set, all teams bar Ferrari had a bigger turbo. Ferrari just opted for a slightly smaller turbo. And what we've seen through pre-season testing is actually Ferrari have made a compromise whereby their turbo is arguably the strongest, and that's allowing them to gain real momentum at starts. So we saw across pre-season testing, drivers like Lewis Hamilton, Charles Leclerc, and also their customers over at Haas were able to make the most of the turbos. They didn't have to rev the engine so much to get a good lightning getaway. So we see drivers use this, like I said, at the start of the race when they're off the line. And I think this year, if anyone watched pre-season testing, we did a couple of practice starts, should we say, at the end of day's running, and there needed to be a bit of time while the drivers rev their engines before they got going, get those turbos like up to speed and hot and ready to go. So there's an extra 5 seconds that the drivers will have to rev their engines. But at the moment, the word on the street is that Ferrari have the strongest turbo and they should be the ones with the best getaways come Australia.
That's interesting, a very interesting element. Of course, not always the size of your turbo, but also how you use it. Now, moving on to active aero. Lawrence, explain to us what active aero means.
I mean, for me, this is the coolest addition to the cars this year. You've got rear wing flaps that opened with DRS when you press the button through an activation zone in the previous era of Formula One. Now, they'll open every time you go on a straight. And not just the rear wing, but the front wings too. So it's quite a sight to watch both flaps on the rear and the front wing open. And that is the idea of that is to reduce the drag down the straight. And so that we'll see Formula One cars going much quicker or getting up to top speed much quicker because we're reducing low drag. So we'll see something very different this year.
You're right, Lawrence. This is also my favourite bit. Fundamentally, this is good fun. I've got a couple of thoughts on this. None of them are very technical. The first is I think it's made the cars look a little bit like, Lawrence, you and I are British. Our American friends would call this battle bots. For us, it was robot wars. I think it's quite front flipper on a fighting robot sometimes as the things lift up. I really like that.
I like this.
But Lawrence, sort of on that. Yeah, well, we'll use that. But also, Lawrence, Ferrari did something very fun in testing. And they're being cagey as to whether this will make it to Australia. But the whole rear wing, or a part of it, seemed to do a full turn, which was brilliant. It was, and everyone's like, the whole wing's turned, not just opened. Lawrence, is this a gimmick? Or could this be one of those things that people go, actually, this is really giving Ferrari an advantage, and therefore you see the teams copying it up and down the grid?
I mean, honestly, this is the coolest thing I think I've seen in testing since Mercedes bought the DAS device. It was brilliant. It flipped 270 degrees, I think, and Ollie Bearman's reaction when he saw it was priceless.
Because he was behind it.
Yeah, because he was behind it when it opened for the first time. Ferrari only ran it for a few laps in pre-season testing, and they were insistent that it is a test item, so that they're not sure yet, like you hinted at, Christian, whether or not we're going to see it over the course of the season. But it certainly got a lot of engineers up and down the paddock scratching their head a little bit to see whether or not they've missed a trick, or indeed they'd seen it and they didn't think that it was worth pursuing. So I'm intrigued to see whether or not we're going to see it on the Ferrari early doors. But it was a very cool device and obviously potentially could give them a really good boost on the straights.
This is what's brilliant about Formula One. Absolutely brilliant. Because it just takes somebody somewhere to have one idea and go, hang on a minute, if we're opening a wing flap, what if the whole wing turned? And it sort of reminds me, one of the greatest sporting stories ever is when Braun GP turned up at testing and had a rocket ship and won the championship with Jenson Button in 2009. And again, the diffuser is a bit at the back of the car that fundamentally helps the car grip. It increases downforce. And they had a double diffuser and this fairly simple idea of sort of doubling it up on it. And again, it was like, wow, what's this? And that won them the championship. Now, listen, I'm putting a lot of pressure on Ferrari here. I'm not saying it's going to win them the championship, but it's amazing when sometimes a fairly simple idea can end up with something really cool and something that has really cool consequences for the team. Ferrari, we wish you well with your rotating wing. Right, let's get another listener question. F1explains@f1.com if you want more answers on anything we're talking about or anything else to do with Formula One, in fact. Isabel is in Perth in Australia, the country of our first race of the season, of course. Isabel says, hi, Christian. My question is, what is in the fuel used in F1 cars? Is it similar to the petrol we use on the roads, or is it a mixture unique to Formula One? Thanks for this podcast. I love it and I've learned so much. Thank you, Isabel. We're very grateful for that. Lawrence, the fuel is different this year, isn't it? So what will the power units that we have just been discussing be running on?
Well, for the first time, Christian, they're going to have advanced sustainable fuel. So F2 and F3 have been trialling this for Formula One over the last couple of years just to get a feel for how it affects performance over the course of a season. And for this year, these fuels will be making their debut in Formula One. Each team will have a different type of blend depending on who their supplier is. You know, Ferrari use Shell, for example. Mercedes use Petronas. Red Bull use ExxonMobil. And effectively, this fuel is an e-fuel. It's made from cutting-edge sources like carbon capture. So that's taking CO2 directly from the air. Municipal waste and non-food biomass, so a mix of the above, and effectively that combines to create the best kind of e-fuel that the various makers can put together. And nothing, just to be clear, nothing comes from crude oil, so that's the difference. It's supposed to be more sustainable.
Yeah, and we should add as well, it's independently certified to meet really strict sustainability standards. It's been trialed in Formula 2 and Formula 3. Just another example of really cool technology making it to Formula 1. Right, I think we should fuel up, Lawrence. I think this is a good time to pop some fuel in and recharge our batteries. Time for a quick break. When we come back, we'll do tyre talk, team talk and track talk. See you in a minute. Welcome back to F1 Explains. I'm Christian Hugill. F1 correspondent Lawrence Barreto is with me to run through all the new stuff in F1 2026. We'll be taking a deep dive into so many of these things in the coming weeks, but we're enjoying talking more broadly about what you can expect this season. And on that note, before we carry on doing that, if you've been with F1 Explains for a while now, you'll know alongside our regular episodes, we also have live shows recorded on big stages at F1 weekends. They're your chance to come and watch this show for no extra cost while you're at a Grand Prix, and also get involved by putting your questions directly to some of the sport's biggest names. And if you can't make it to the race, we always say, don't worry, you can listen to the shows right here on this feed. Now, our first live show of the season is in Australia. Makes sense, doesn't it? On the F1 Fan Zone stage with special guest James Vowles. Lawrence, would you say James is your favourite team principal?
I've obviously got no favourite team principals, Christian, because I love them all and I need to talk to them all. But I do think that he is... he's a very articulate team principal.
He's a very articulate. He is a very articulate man. So the very articulate James Vowles will be with me on Thursday, the 5th of March, on the F1 Fan Zone stage at Albert Park. Let us know if you're going to be there, please. Send us a question. We might be able to make you part of the show. Email f1explains@f1.com. As I say, let us know if you are going to be there. But if not, you can still send James a question anyway. And that show is coming right soon to this feed. You'll be able to listen to it, whether you can make it to Australia or not. Right, let's talk tyres. Pirelli are still the official tyre supplier of Formula One. That has not changed, but the tyres themselves have. We've got different tyres for this year, haven't we, Lawrence?
We sure have. Much like the cars, which are narrower, smaller, nimbler, lighter, so are the tyres in that they are narrower 18-inch tyres for 2026. The compounds have changed slightly as well. So last year, we had a C6 in the compound range. This year, we're down to C1, C2, C3, C4, C5. So those five compound tyres, and they're the slick tyres in addition to the intermediates and the full wet tyres that will still be available should the conditions turn nasty. And we're actually going to see all five of those compounds in some form over the course of the first three races. The harder tyres will make an appearance in race three in Japan.
So yeah, C1 being the hardest tyre available, C5 being the softest tyre available. Those newer to Formula One may not know this. Those who've been with us a while will, but every weekend Pirelli picks three of those tyre compounds to act as that weekend's soft, medium and hard tyres. And actually, Lawrence, just while we're on the tyres, now you were out in testing. I've not seen a car on track yet this year. The first race of the season will be my first time seeing the new cars. From what friends have told me, people who work in the sport have told me, like the smaller tyres, and as you've just said, Lawrence, the fact the cars do look a little bit smaller has actually sort of made a notable impact on the look of them, that they seem to look a little bit racier, a little bit more agile. You've really noticed the difference, don't you, with these new cars?
Right, absolutely. Even though we're only talking like 20 centimetres, you know, in terms of the size of the cars shrinking, they look considerably smaller than that. And I think there's that real feel of having these cars that, I guess when I was a kid, you want those cool futuristic looking cars on posters on your walls. And I do think that 2026 spec cars look just like that. Obviously, yeah, as you said, the tyres are smaller to fit onto a smaller car as well. But I think the feedback generally from the drivers in terms of, you know, the cars feeling lighter, narrower, smaller, more nimble, was definitely very positive across testing.
And listen, that's an advantage for the sport, because we hope it will, you know, increase overtaking, and not just increase overtaking more simply, but increase the likelihood of a driver thinking, I can make this move work as well. It encourages racing, and it's why a lot of the aerodynamic rules that we've changed, that we were talking about in part one, have been brought in as well. Of course, F1's always looking to increase more racing, increase overtaking opportunities. And we hope that'll carry on this season. So let's move on. Another listener question, f1explains@f1.com. We're going to look at what else is different for 2026 other than the new cars and the new rules. This one is on Cadillac from Nick in Norway. Nick says, hi guys, thanks for a great podcast. I'm a regular listener from Oslo, Norway, and I love your show. We love you, Nick. Excellent work. Nick says, I have a question about qualifying this season. We now have 11 teams. Will there still be the five slowest cars that go out in Q1 and Q2? Or will we leave six cars in each session? Do you know, I only thought of this fairly recently, Lawrence. Like, oh, Q1, Q2, Q3 is different because we've now got 22 cars. Lawrence, explain how this is going to work.
Well, it's just as well, there's a podcast called F1 Explains, Christian, isn't it? So that it can kind of keep you up to date on what you need to know for the season ahead.
I mean, I like to think so, Lawrence. The existence of it helps me.
Well, yes. You're right in that there'll be six cars leaving Q1 and Q2, because the idea was to keep 10 cars fighting for pole in Q3. So we'll just be trimming off an extra car in Q1. So rather than five cars, six cars will go in that session, and the same again in Q2. And that will leave 10 in the pole position shootout in that final segment of quali. So yeah, with Valtteri Bottas and Checo Perez joining the fray with Cadillac, we've just had to tweak the format slightly. So it'll be the same time durations for each session. So there'll be just a couple more cars on the track in that first session, and obviously one extra one in the second session. But yeah, bit trickier for traffic on certain circuits. But yeah, that's the plan for this year.
We're going to talk plenty more about Cadillac on this podcast in the coming weeks. We're looking to do an episode with them where we really dig into their journey a little bit more, from sort of the idea to make a new Formula One team to here they are on the grid in 2026. But just briefly, Lawrence, we should reflect on it. It's the first brand new Formula One team since Haas. And they had a really successful testing, all things considered, didn't they? You know, it's, of course, a big old ask to come into Formula One. This is the top level of motorsport. And I think, Lawrence, I don't know about you, I think they'll be really encouraged by how testing went. Reliability looked good. Of course, they've got some skilled old hands in Valtteri and in Sergio Perez. A really promising start for Cadillac as our newbies.
Oh, super encouraging, Christian. I think there was mutual respect from their rivals in the paddock because it's no mean feat to start a Formula One team from scratch. They only got the go-ahead around a year or so ago, and yet they were able to shake the car down early doors in January. They were at the Barcelona shakedown. They made the two pre-season tests in Bahrain. Their reliability improved over the course of that period. You know, they still have only run that car for 10 days. You know, that's all they've got in terms of data relative to their rivals, who have obviously got years, decades of experience running a Formula One car. And I think the way they went about the operation, particularly in Bahrain, you know, everything from the slick pit stops that they were doing to the operation that of the car, to the logistics, to the look of the garage, to the car itself out on track, with Pat Simmons even telling me that he was, he'd had a few people come up to him and said there were some quite cool, neat details on the car from an aero package kind of perspective. I think the job that they've done is spectacular. Of course, they are up against it because they are a new team and they do not have the wealth of data or experience competing in Formula One, and they are starting from scratch. But I think, as starts go for a new team, they've made a really strong one, even if they will probably be towards the back of the field to start with.
And Lawrence mentioned Pat Simmons there. Pat's got a wealth of experience in Formula One. He's Cadillac's executive engineering consultant for the Cadillac F1 team. They've obviously gone with Pat's experience. It's not a coincidence, is it, Lawrence, that our newer teams, because I'm coming on to Audi now, have gone for a lot of experience. Obviously, Sergio Perez and Valtteri Bottas, both race winners, hundreds of Grand Prix between them, moving on to Audi. Now, not a brand new team as such. Audi has purchased the Sauber team, but a lot of what they're doing is new. They're now an engine supplier for the first time. They've gone with Nico Hülkenberg, of course, who is an unchanged driver lineup for the team, and Nico Hülkenberg and Gabriel Bortoleto. But again, Sauber being Audi, they've got that experience with the Hulk. And of course, Gabby's got a season under his belt now. And again, a broadly encouraging first test for them, Lawrence, considering they've got so much to change and are now an engine supplier to their own team, a works team, as we like to call it. You know, so much has changed for them.
We've seen in previous years, Christian, how hard it is to create a Formula One power unit. We saw Honda struggle when they came in with McLaren almost a decade ago. We saw them struggle again with Aston Martin through pre-season tests, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more over the coming podcast series as well. But for Audi, the job that they've done to do a very polished power unit, and they've only got one team that they're supplying themselves. You know, Mercedes are supplying three other customer teams, so they will get much more mileage on their new engine for 2026, whereas Audi have just got that bank of the two cars and their own team to learn about it. So I think the job that Audi have done so far is very impressive from a power unit perspective. I think they've just looked to improve and enhance the chassis side from a team that was very well respected within the paddock in Sauber. Independent team, been in the midfield for a long time, and they are just going through that tricky challenge of trying to become a big team, you know, growing from a team that punches above their weight to one that can punch consistently at their weight. And I think that what they've done, recruiting Jonathan Wheatley from Red Bull, Mattia Binotto from Ferrari, they've won from experience, from a leadership perspective. Like you said, they've got Nico Hülkenberg, who's a veteran now in Formula One, but also a rising star in Gabriel Bortoleto, who had an outstanding rookie season. So they've done a really good job, I think, through pre-season. They were the first ones out for the shakedown. They brought a huge upgrade package to Bahrain. The car was night and day different. And Nico said, you know, it's a big step up from Spec A, and it's no mean feat to be able to do that. So I've been very, very impressed by the approach that Audi have taken, because they've had success in other motorsports, but it's no guarantee of success when you come to Formula One.
They're also being so punchy from the people I speak to within the team of their long-term ambitions. They're saying, as you just said, Lawrence, this is a huge car manufacturer. They are really making bold statements that they want to be in this for the long term and in it to win. So following Audi's progress, following Cadillac's progress, over not just this season, but the coming seasons is going to be just fascinating in terms of Formula One storylines. So we've got a couple of new teams and we've got one new driver on the grid as well, with Isaac Hadji replacing Yuki Tsunoda at the main Red Bull team. We've got Arvid Lindblad in at Racing Bull. So going to be interesting to see how he gets on. He's had a very promising junior series record, someone that Red Bull speak very highly of. And on the race calendar front, we've got a new Grand Prix. Listen, it's always so exciting when a new track comes onto the calendar. We get to see it for the first time. Lawrence, we're going to Madrid in September. Really exciting. Great city in Spain, isn't it? Absolutely great city. Just so exciting to have a new Grand Prix.
Yeah, it's very cool when a new track comes on board. And the one in Madrid looks pretty spectacular, to be honest. It's going to be a street track. Part of it will be permanent, but most of it will be a street track. Carlos Sainz, whose home city is Madrid, is an ambassador for the race. And there are real high expectations for this addition to the calendar. Two Spanish Grand Prix on the calendar this year, joining Barcelona's Circuit de Catalunya.
Lovely. And that's another thing, by the way, we will dig into on F1 Explains a little bit later this year, the new race in Madrid. Right, Lawrence, just before we go, I mean, I find myself, so I'm sure like you, we're recording this on Thursday evening UK time, the podcast is out on Friday, so like we're days away from going out to Australia. Lawrence, I'm really excited because, you know, you and I have been covering the sport a while. Lawrence, you longer than me. We've both been F1 fans for a long, long time. But this feels so different. This feels so much fun. This feels such a big change. I'm so excited to see how it shakes out. Are you?
I mean, honestly, Christian, it's been so long since I've gone to an opening race of the season. And honestly, have so little idea about what to expect from the first race. Whether that is pecking order, whether or not that's how qualifying is going to unfold, what the racing is going to be like on Sunday afternoon. I think it's fascinating. And just talking to the teams across Bahrain testing, they are in as much in the dark as we are about what to expect. Yeah, okay, there's a rough pecking order that looks like it's emerging, but there is no real clear indication of who's going to be quick and who's not going to be quick. And that is unheard of in Formula One in recent years. So yeah, I can't wait to get there. And Christian, you know this, Australia is a stunner of an opening race of the season. So I cannot wait to get
out. Oh, it's amazing.
There.
Yeah, it was my first Australian Grand Prix last year and I absolutely loved it. So I can't wait. Lawrence, really appreciate you joining us. Thank you very much. And we will do lots more previewing of the Australian Grand Prix on this feed, because a reminder that F1 Nation and F1 Explains are right here together on the same feed now. So F1 Nation's preview of the Australian Grand Prix will be out on Monday. So if you're a new listener to this feed, make sure you click like, follow or subscribe, not just for a notification of when we've got new F1 Explains episodes, but also new F1 Nations episodes as well. Now, I'm back next Friday, direct from Australia. We're also, of course, doing that live show with the Williams team principal, James Vowles, at 2 in the afternoon on the Thursday of the Australian Grand Prix weekend. If you're going to be there, send us a question for James. We might be able to make you part of the show. Email f1explains@f1.com. And of course, you can follow the Australian Grand Prix on F1 TV with Lawrence and the gang, where you will not miss a thing. Right, Lawrence, I will see you in Australia. F1 Explains listeners, thank you for joining us. I will talk to you from Australia. From all of us here, bye for now.